A lot of new material I came across, and I will start with Sandikois. Baruch Hashem, I'm sure many of you have grandchildren, probably everyone here in this ulam here probably at one point was a sandik, I would imagine. Because the Iker Sandikois really appears to go to the grandparents, not to the rabbi. That was a minig in Klal Yisrael for generations. Today, for some reason, many, many B'nai Torah, they give the Sandikois to their Rosh Hashiva. Or they give it to the Rav of the city, the Rav. That appears to be something new. From the earliest sources, it appears that there are even rights. Who gets Sandikois? Who has first rights to get Sandikois? Do we give it to the father of the wife, of the mother of the baby, or does the father of the husband? And it appears there were different minhagim in Klal Yisrael, the difference between the Ashkenazim and the Svardim. By the Svardim, it appeared that the first baby, the first child, the first Zohar, male child, the Sandik, was always the father of the mother. And then the second child, it was the father of the father. By the Ashkenazim, it was the other way around. It was always the father of the father, and the father, and the second baby was the father of the mother. Today, Rav Avadia Yosef writes that it became universal, even by the Svardim. I have to really see if this is totally, everything I'm saying over here is accurate. I have here in writing, Rav Avadia Yosef says that it became universal today that the father of the father gets Sandikois. Mm. Let me actually read you what Rav Avadia Yosef says, because he's coming from the point of a Svardim. And maybe I'm making a mistake. Let me see if I read it rightly. Right, so over here, Muva Baram Moke Bal Bris. Let's see. Ulam, let me read you over here. Ulam, the Eidos Ashkenaz, Nehagim. No, I may say everything I tell you is a mistake. Everything I tell you is wrong. Everything I do is wrong. Let's chaz, Nochemo. Who has Kedima to get Sandikois? So he starts off by Rav Chaim Palagi. Chaim Palagi was the mechaber very, very famous person, Rav Chaim Palagi. He wrote many, many svarim. Well, there's something I think about that we use all the time that he wrote. He holds that the minig ideinu. The minig is that the father of the Avi HaBaal, the father's father, he gets first rights. And then the second male in the family, if there's a second Zohar, goes to the father of the mother. And that's the minig in Sulanki, Bisaluniki. Okay, it's a very famous city. Where is that? Anyone know where Saloniki is? That's a very... Salonika?
Salonika is in Greece.
Greece. Salonika in Greece.
Salonika.
And then he brings down...
It dates back over there to Shlomo HaMelech.
Okay, so that was the minute. The minute was the first child in Salonika in Greece. The minute was that the first Zohar, the Sandik, is the father of the father. The second is the grandfather...
Salonika.
Okay, Salonika, fine. And however, in the right, but
since
just
time, you know, when Salonika became popular for Jews, the reason Jews there, because it was under the Turkish rule, later it became Greece.
Okay. Now, other parts can say the minig in Medinas Luv. Does anyone know? Thank you very much for the coffee. Thank you very much. Does anyone know what the name of the city called Luv? Lamed Vav Beis. The minig in it seems it was a very established city.
Libya?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, there the minig was the father of the mother has Kadima to be the first Sandik. And why? What's the reason? Very simple. Isha ki sazria the Yolada Zohar, the biblical source, Isha Kazuki, that if the who is Mazriya Techila, whatever that means, this is something which is scientific, not scientific, who is the one, when a man and woman conceive, there are two partners. It's not just that there are two partners that come together. There's also, it's not clear what this means, if this is something which is scientific or something which is spiritual, which one has a desire, a greater desire to have a child. Okay, this can be manifested both physically and spiritually. And science, and I'm sure science has something to say about this, but the pasuk says Isha ki zazria. If the Isha, if she is the one who initiates, well, the one that has the greater desire, the result is a zohar. If it is the Ish, the husband, who has a greater desire to have children, whatever that means, then the result is a female. Thus, if we have in front of us a male child, to whom do we attribute that zohar? To the wife. Because she's the one, Isha ki sazria v'yolada zohar. It is only fair that she has the choice to select who in her family should be the sandik, which of course goes to her father. And therefore in Libya, it was the minig, the sandikos went to her father. Now, here is something which it does not say, and to me it's very curious, and you have to really fill in the gaps in order to see if this is part of the difference in the equation. What about the name of the child? We know that there are different minhagim, different parts of Klal Yisrael, who selects the name of the child. As far as I know, in Ashkenaz, amongst Ashkenazim, generally, the one that gets the first name is the wife. So let's assume that the child that's born is the Bechor. Not necessarily, but let's make believe the first child to be born is a Bechor. There are no females, so it's the first baby, the first child. So when it says here that in Libya they gave the sandukois to her father, because it says Isha ki sazria v'yolada zohar, what about in Salonika? Well, they didn't know that it says in the pasuk Isha ki sazria v'yolda zohar. They didn't know that. Well, they were ignorant. They knew what it says in the pasuk. So how come they still selected the sandik to be the father of the husband? Maybe it's because the father of the mother got the name. So is there a trade-off taking place over here? There's a very important piece of information that we are missing in order to have clarity in why are we giving rights to the mother or the father for sandukois. We also should know which one of these two has kedima to select a name for the child, to name it after one of their relatives. Perhaps, in fairness, if we're giving the father of the mother the right to name the baby, that's why we're now going to give the father of the husband the right to have sandukois, and vice versa. So it doesn't say that. I don't have access to that information.
Very often a great-grandfather.
Okay, so we do that. So that's another whole topic of discussion. Let's put that aside. The great-grandfather, okay, that's a very good question. We actually once spoke about that. The great-grandfather has kedima. I don't remember this. We once learned about that. Okay, there's kibud av ein, there's a go to the grandfather by bris milah, there's a special inyan. Okay, well, let's put that aside. It says by Yosef, gam b'nei Yosef, it says, I think, perish in the pasuk, that b'nei mocher ben Menashe. So mocher ben Menashe, mocher, that was a grandfather. Yuldu al birke Yosef, what about a great-grandfather? Okay, we have to put that aside for right now. Let's just first talk about the grandparents. We give it to the grandparents. Who gets first? We quote a pasuk, Isha ki sazria. We quoted the other minhag, where it goes to the father of the husband, and we also presented a wild card is, what about who gets the name? Does the one who gets the name have an influence on having in all fairness of trading off and letting the other family get the right to have sandukois? Now, let's go further. He writes over here, Ulam be'edus Ashkenaz. He writes that amongst the Ashkenazim, the minig is the first child goes to the father of the mother. He writes here, Rabbi Dvorkis, that the minig is amongst Ashkenazim, the father of the mother has first rights. Uva ben Sheni goes to the father of the husband. And then he quotes, Uva Shelus Uchuvus Yabia Oimer, Chele Gimel, Simen Chav Vav, Oizbeis Kosav, Ravadia Yosef Zechat Sadek Levrocha writes, Sheposhat Haminog, Bechol Tufutsos Yisrael, Lechabed Besandukois Es Avi Habal. So Rav Avadya Yosef writes, and he lived very recently, right? He only died a couple of years ago. And he writes, Mispashet haminag b'chol tefutzos Yisrael. That's what he writes. That who has the first right for sandekois? The father of the husband. V'aviyo isha es avi habal, v'yeshu zem esho mitzvos. Okay, that's what he writes. Es avi habal. All right. Whatever it is. Okay, now, let's go, discuss some other, let's discuss some other issues about sandukais. A sandukais, first of all, what exactly do you do as a sanduk? What is your role? So it appears the primary role of sandukais are the knees. The baby should rest upon your knees. How do we know this? A medrash, a Yalkut Shmoni. Now, before we even go to the Yalkut Shmoni, let's discuss something even more fundamental, because it all ties into each other. What does the word sandok mean? It's a very big mystery what this word means and where it comes from, what exactly is the role of the sandok. Many people will tell you the word sandok is a goyisha word, and the entire idea of sandokais, they will argue, is a secular role, it means godfather, a godfather. And this, I'm assuming, has some parallel by the goyim, that is a person that is he oversees, he has some type of mystical power. I'm not familiar with the theology of the goyim, but they when they people are into the etymology, tracing the etymology of words, the results they come up with of a sanduk is not very positive. It appears that it's something more secular that has a parallel by the Umay Sa'ila. Now, before we elaborate upon this, I just want to tell you something that really I had an experience 2 days ago, which shed light on this, at least in my little mind. Now, it's totally not related, but yet I just want to bring out a very small point I just found to be very interesting. A couple of years ago, I read a very good article about the question, where today are the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash? We know that on the Arch of Titus, we see a depiction of the menorah. Okay, whether it's the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, whether it's not the menorah, the fact that there is a depiction of someone carrying the menorah and other kelim in the background leads us to assume that the Romans, when they destroyed the Bayis Sheni, took with them, removed from Eretz Yisrael, all of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. There was nothing left. They looted, they took it to Rome. What happened then? Well, Rome was eventually conquered, and those that conquered Rome were conquered, and those that conquered the conquerors were conquered, v'chulu v'chulu, along Chavgadya. So I read a very good article in a very religious magazine, a Satmar magazine called Ami. It's a Satmar publication, and they have a lot of interesting articles. And I actually knew who he was, Lawrence. Maybe someone can help me. His last name Lawrence. He was a big professor, and he was a professor in YU. He then went on to NYU. I don't know where he is now. He's an Eluisha person. He writes a lot of these types of articles.
Schiffman,
Lawrence Schiffman. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Lawrence Schiffman, he's a historian. I met him once. He's a brilliant person. He's like a real professor. He's really a professor type. He's a very brilliant person, and he writes a lot. And he wrote an article that was published in Ami magazine describing the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. And he says there, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and he uses language, and he made an impression on me, that the kelim do not exist today. They were looted, they were stolen, they were melted down, and just not possible that they can exist today. They were looted for over 2,000 years of Golis. They're probably fragments of the gold are found in ancient coins, in ancient utensils. There was so much barbarism and thugs and theft and wars. It just somehow, it just evaporated and was diluted, melted down, and was recycled somewhere in the world into coins and utensils, and they do not exist. And he went on in this article, Dr. Lawrence Schiffman, to try to prove this and to make and to state as a solid fact, and don't challenge this idea. And this was printed in a Haredi, you know, a real heavy-duty Haredi magazine that's read by all different people. And I'm assuming the editors that published this article, they gave it, it carries weight. Okay, very nice. Okay, what am I to say? Whatever, I read it. Then about 2 days ago, I was looking at an old copy of Kankan, the Kankan Journal. It's a new journal. It's been around for about 2-3 years. And they published very fascinating articles. And they had an article on this topic, where are the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash? And this article appeared to be the author seemed to know quite a bit. And he basically showed how the kelim, where they went. They went to Rome. And we have historical documentation of where they went. And from Rome they went to this place. I keep all these things to me. That I'm ignorant in these matters. And a lot of things, I can't even pronounce the name of these countries and the name of these dynasties and empires. And he shows an enormous amount of research to show it went from here to here to here to here. And eventually, they were sent back to Eretz Yisrael. Why were they sent back? Because when they reached one of the nations, the empires that captured, was an empire which had many, many Jews lived in that empire. And they told their king, do you know why Rome was destroyed? It was sacked? It was because they had the kelim. They were holding in their possession holy items that they should not have been holding. And you know why the next nation, why they were destroyed? It was because they were holding in their possession things that they should not be holding. It's not to your benefit to keep in your possession the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. Your empire is not going to last. And what do you need it for anyway? What do you get out of it? So the king said, you're right. And he was scared. This is documented. He has all the footnotes, and he sent it back to Eretz Yisrael. And when they arrived in Eretz Yisrael, they were sent to the Christians. It's a whole long story. It goes through all the details. And basically, they were hidden. They were hidden somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. And that's where it dries up. No one really knows clarity where they were hidden. Now, is this article more authoritative than the article from Lawrence Schiffman? I don't know. Who am I to say? But all I can tell you is here, I'll just give you a mushroom. Here I am. I know from nothing. I read this article from Lawrence Schiffman, and he convinced me that the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash no longer exists. They have been melted away. They have been recycled, and they're gone. And then I read another article where someone obviously did a lot of research and he really seems to know his stuff, makes a very powerful argument that kelim exist. And not only do they exist, they're back. They made their way back. They traveled the world. They traveled from Rome to this place, to that place, to this place. And eventually they were sent back and they were hidden somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. I remember one of the things I remember, we actually cited the book All for the Boss when I was a child. I remember All for the Boss. That was a real sensation. Where they write there that a person, a farmer in Eretz Yisrael, was working on his field somewhere, who knows where, and he discovered a cave, and he went into the cave, and he saw there what he thought were the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash.
Of the first Beis HaMikdash.
No, not the first. The first cannot be. Cannot be the first. Okay, Ellis, no one knows anything. No. That's exactly the point of this article. This article in Kankan is not discussing the kilm of the first, discussing the kilm of the second Beis HaMikdash. He traces their journey. He traces the journey they went to Rome, and he tells you exactly what happened in Rome. It was a very long Rome where they were put. There were things that were on public display, the things that were put in caves. And then when Rome was conquered, what happened? He goes through in detail exactly how they traveled from nation to nation. And they were then sent back to Eretz Yisrael because it was viewed that they're dangerous. The people that are taking possession of these caves, like the Aron HaKodesh, when the Aron was captured by the Pelishtim, they died. They kept on dying. They were terrified. They sent it back. They put it in a wagon. And miraculously, the wagon went back. The same thing with the kiln of the Beis HaMikdash, the Bayis Sheni. Bayis Rishon, I don't know, whatever it was. But then there is a story in All for the Boss, whether you believe it or not, I assume it's authentic, where this person, this farmer, sent a letter to... We sent a messenger to America to the boss, Rabbi Herman, with a discovery. Rabbi Herman sent his son to the Chofetz Chaim with a letter telling him all of the details. And the story is, this is what it says in the book, whether it's true or not, the Chofetz Chaim, he read the letter very slowly and carefully, and he was very disturbed. He took out Sfarim from his library. He didn't have too many Sfarim, it seems. And after whatever period of time, he took the letter and he burnt the letter. Mm-hmm. He burnt the letter and he said, no one should just leave it alone. Mm-hmm. And many years later, the Chofetz Chaim commented, out of the person who found the Kelim by now must have died. And with him, the secret has died. And that's a good thing, he felt. It was a good thing until Mashiach comes. New, is the story authentic? Is it not authentic? I don't know. The only thing is, this article put me in a very different frame of mind. We learned about the Sandik. If you study the Sandik, you're going to see over and over the Sandik is a secular minhag that has crept into Judaism. The Sandik is called the Godfather. There's something that is not kosher about this Sandik. It was embraced because through this kibud, this honor, they were able to do fundraising. It was the tradition that they would sell it at an auction. Before it became the minhag to give it to the grandparents, it was auctioned off to a wealthy person. And whoever was the Sandik had an obligation to pay, to give a lot of money to the family, they were very poor, to buy a crib, a stroller, some baby formula, and some diapers, okay, all, and maybe to pay for some for the tuition for playgroup. Okay, so it was a major expense to have a child, and the Sandik, by taking the honor of being the Sandik, would give a very significant gift to the poor family to help them start off. So somehow the appeal of using this to raise money and this idea that the Goyim had, this thing called a godfather, it just somehow took off and we Judified it. This, what I just told you, is something that you're going to see in many Sfarim. That's how they're going to explain the word Sandik. They're going to trace the root of this word, and they're going to tell you about it was about paying money. Okay, I accept it. But when I read it over here in this Sefer, he talks about the Sandik, you know, don't believe everything you read. Just because Dr. Lawrence Schiffman, a very fine scholar, Talmud Chacham, he says that the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash evaporated. Really? The Kelim are such holy objects. Is it really fair to say they just evaporated? maybe they have a hashkacha, a pratah, because the Shvarach is guarding over them, and there's some credibility in another approach that they made their way back to Eretz Yisrael, and they were put in hiding. Just because we don't have clarity in what exactly is the exact role of the Sandik, where it really comes from, doesn't necessarily mean that we should accept with blind faith what we read in many scholarly journals, that the Sandik is really a secular minug which crept into Judaism because of its appeal in using it as a technique to raise money. Now, why? Because we have a Medrash. And the Medrash says, now it's very shocking what the Medrash says. David HaMelech said, it's a Yalkut Shmoini, and it's, I think it's another Medrash as well, where David HaMelech said that all the different parts of my body I use for mitzvahs. He goes through, here it is, Omar David. Over here, I have it over here, call on the pasuk of Tehillim, call atzmoisai toimarna, in Mizmor Lamed Hey. Omar David lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ani mishabechacha, I praise you b'chol evarai, with all of my limbs, call atzmoisai, u'mekayim mochem mitzvah. And there, I don't have the whole thing in front of me, but it goes through all the different parts of his body, what he does with his fingers, with his hands, his head, his arm, v'chulu v'chulu. And then he says, birkai, my knees, ani oise sandokis. Sandokis. So we see this word is used, sandokis, with my knees. I do sandokis, la yelodim, for yelodim. I use my knees to be a sandik la yelodim, b'sha'as hamila. So it's not so clear to say that the word sandik is only a secular word which means godfather, when we find this in the Medrash and in the Yalkut Shmoini that uses exactly this word in reference to the knees, which is the place where you put the baby. You know, you put the baby on the sandik, he holds the child on his knees when at the time of Bris Milah. So you do see that. Now what does it mean in that pasuk? It doesn't answer the question. What does the word sandik mean? I do sandokis. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. No one really has clarity in translating the word sandik. What exactly does it mean? We know, we describe what it means. The person who holds the baby when the moel does the circumcision. How does he hold the baby? He holds it on his knees, on a pillow, and the pillow goes on the knees. That's what we call a sandik. But what does that really mean? What is the exact translation of the word? It's not so clear. But one thing that we do take from this is a little bit of a drush, something a little bit different, is that the sandik, the service of the sandik relates to the knees. What is unique about knees? The answer is, only human beings have knees. Malochim do not have knees. It says in the pasuk, "V'nasati l'cha mehalachim bein ho'imdim ho'ela." It's a very important pasuk. We learn this pasuk in Chagai. I think it's in Chagai. I don't remember. I think it's in Chagai. "V'nasati l'cha, I will give you man mehalachim, the ability. I'll give you mobility, bein ho'imdim ho'ele, amongst the angels." The angels are called oimdim, they stand. Which Chazal explained to mean, a malach does not have the ability to get a promotion. Whatever a malach is created, there are malachim, there are different levels of angels. Whichever level a malach is created, that's where it remains for its entire existence. A human being has the ability to go higher and higher, to ascend. Yelchu mechayel el choyel. And the tools that we gain to go higher and higher in the next world are the tools that we are the mitzvahs, the Torah, the mitzvahs that we acquire in this world. This gives us knees. The knee is the part of the leg which differentiates us from angels. If you have a knee, you can bend your foot. If you can bend your foot, you can move, you can travel, you can be mobile, you can go higher and higher. Now, let me prove this to you. Every day, originally in the Beis HaMikdash, it says in the Mishnah, they would decide who has the zuchus to be makter the ketores. Who has the zuchus? So what would they do? How would they decide who has the zuchus? Which kohen has the zuchus, the right to offer the ketores? They had a foot race up the mizbeach. They stood in the bottom of the mizbeach and they blew a whistle. It was like the Olympics every day in the Beis HaMikdash. And whoever got up to the top of the mizbeach first won. He merited to bring the ketores. What happened? It got a little violent. There were sore losers. And the sore loser would shove the winner off the top of the mizbeach. It's 20 feet. Mm-hmm. The top of the mizbeach is 10 amos, which is between 15 and 20 feet. It's not fun to be thrown from a height of 15 to 20 feet.
Two-story building.
Okay, it's a two-story building. And it didn't always turn out well. So when they saw that this is not working out well, so they decided no more. We're going to have a pious. We're going to have a lottery. Okay, they had a technique. But originally the technique was a foot race. Now let me ask you, isn't that a little weird? A little childish? You have adults, holy, holy people. These are the holiest people in the world. The Kohanim. Okay, these are Kedoshe Elyon. What are you kidding? We're going to have a race? The Olympics? In the Beis HaMikdash? 5 o'clock in the morning? What's going on here? Makoro. What's going on over here? Does it make any sense? A foot race? To go up top of the Mizbeach? To ascend the Mizbeach by running? What's going on? The answer is, you have to use your knees to get up to the top of the Mizbeach. And you got to know how to use them very well. To get to the top of the Mizbeach represents V'nosati l'cho mehalichim bein ho'oimdim ho'ele. The Beis HaMikdash is Hashem's home. The Beis HaMikdash, certainly, the divine presence of Hashem is there. There are malachim all over the place. Imagine, right? If Hashem is there, if Hashem's Shechina is resting, Hashem, when he comes with an entourage. L'havdil, when the President of the United States comes, he doesn't come alone. He comes. They come weeks in advance to scout out the whole place. They check everything. They even test the gasoline that goes into his car. Everything they check. Everything, you don't come alone. The Beis HaMikdash is filled with the Divine Presence, but the Divine Presence, besides Hashem, is Oimdim. To serve Hashem, you have to be a Mahalich. V'nasati l'cha mahalchem. Who is eligible to be a Mahalich? Who is eligible to go Yelchu Mechayel El Choyel? It was precisely through a foot race. It was a dogma. Who can show they are from the B'nai Aliyah? People who could ascend, can be a Mahalech and go higher and higher. It was who is the best? He is the person that can give Nachas Ruach to Hashem. You got to use your knees. That's the part of the body that has to be perfectly oiled and perfect function to get up top of the Mizbeach quickly, to show you eligible to be the one that will give Nachas Ruach to bring the Ketores to Hashem. It's the knees. That was what made you eligible to bring the Ketores. When you Bris Milah, Chazal, there are numerous Memori Chazal that tell us that Bris Milah is equivalent to be maktir the ketores. That's what it says. Okay, now why is that so? Okay, there are different midrashim why that's so, because the orla produces a, when the orla is removed, it produces an odor that's not necessarily very pleasant, but okay, let's leave that aside. This is just a fact. What the connection is it's not for now. I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I remember either or. But bris milah is equivalent to the bringing of ketores. Who is eligible to bring the ketores? Whoever has a good set of knees. Whoever wins the foot race. Mm-hmm. What is the sandik? The sandik is the person who sits. Mm-hmm. How do you hold a baby? Mm-hmm. There's only one way. You don't hold the baby in your hands. Mm-hmm. You don't hold the baby on your shoulder. You put the baby on the knees. Not on your lap, on the knees. That's what it says. David HaMelech said, I used birkai, my knees, ani oise sandokis. That's what the sandik is all about. The sandik is about the knees. Just like in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a foot race. There was the Olympics. Who, a sprinter, who can get to the top of the Mizbeach first? Who has the best set of knees? Who can we say is a mahalech bein ha'imdim ha'ela? He's the one that gives the nachas ruach to Hashem. When this child enters into Yados, it takes place on the knees, on the person who is a mahalech in this world, bein ha'imdim ha'ela. Unfortunately, most people in this world are going nowhere, especially the Ummah Yisra'ilah. They ain't going nowhere. They're not from the B'nai Aliyah. They're stagnant. They don't go anywhere. They don't elevate themselves in spirituality. Klal Yisrael are the Mahalchim Bein Ha'imdim Ha'ilah. And amongst Klal Yisrael, there are special people who are mahalchim, who go higher and higher. We want the child to go higher and higher. We want the child to develop into a person who's from the B'nai Aliyah. So the bris milah has to, and by doing so, will give nachas ruach to Hashem. To bring the ketores, you have to have good set of knees. To do the bris milah, it has to be done upon the knees, upon a good set of knees. Who has a good set of knees? The spiritual knees. Who are the oimdim, the mahalchim? The Talmidei Chachamim, the Gedolei Yisrael. And that's obviously why today they write over here about giving it to the grandparents. Many times they first give it to Gedolei Yisrael. A lot of families that I know, the first child, they gave it to this Rosh Hashiva, and the second child to that Rosh Hashiva, and when they ran out of Rosh Yeshivas, so then they started giving to the grandparents. Not always. Some families, they bedafka gave to them. They gave right away to the grandparents.
Rabbi Yaakov Kalinetsky never took it unless there was a living grandfather.
Okay, Derech Eretz. I know certain yeshivas, there are places where you give it always, not once, you always give it. We have a whole shiur on this, this whole makar. It's a very weak, there's a minute, you only give sandukos once. You don't give sandukos more than once. It's a very weak makar for that, very, very weak. You can give sandukos to the same person multiple times. We once discussed this, not for now, but there are certain places, certain communities, where the rabbi always get sandukos. And if you have the bris milah in his shul, it's not their cheretz not to give the rabbi or the Rosh Hashiva. And if you want to give it to your grandparents, kol hakavod. Just don't do it. Don't have the bris milah in the shul. Have it in a different shul. Have it in a wedding hall, something like that. Because in this mokoyim, if you want to give it to the grand, kol hakavod, great grandfather, Kol HaKavod, 100%, but just don't have the ceremony in this makom. In this makom, the custom is you give it to the rabbi, the Rosh Hashiva. Why? Because of this idea. The knees represent a mahalich. V'nasat l'cha mahalchem b'ena imdimel sandakois is all about the knees. Ad kidei kach, what happens is a very common question when an adult has a bris mila. Who is the sandik? Who is the sandik? And how do you do sandakois? When an adult has a bris mila, it's typically done when the person is lying down on a bed.
In a doctor's office,
on a bed, on some type of surgical, in a surgical environment. Mm-hmm. So then, is there something called sandakoi? So this is a very big topic. It's not so simple. And the pashtus is no. To be a sandik, you must use your knees. If the knees are not being used, it's not a halachic sandik. And the only makar for that is David. Because David says birkai, and also he says layilodim. It says in the Medrash, with my knees, birkai, ani oises sandokis layilodim. Why did David need to say layilodim? What happens? No one was an adult who had a bris mila. No adults happens all the time. Rabbi Belsky was one of the biggest experts on giving a bris mila to adults. It's not so simple to give a bris mila to an adult. Okay, so of course, you know, you want a doctor. Okay, but the doctor is not a Talmud Chacham. He doesn't know all the halachas. And the Moyalim, they're not doctors. So you're doing a bris mila on an adult. This is a different procedure. This is a surgical procedure, which is a whole different ballgame. You don't yai after, it's a whole different cup of tea. You know, so it's a big problem. You have to have someone that has the medical experience, has been trained professionally, mm-hmm. and also the Talmud Chacham. He knows all the rules, what to do. So the Olam says that a sandik by an adult, you hold his hand. The person that when the bris mila is done, you oiches biyadoi. And it comes from Avraham Avinu himself. Avraham Avinu, it says in the Medrash, that when Avraham Avinu did a bris mila on himself, he was terrified, and Hashem was oiches biyadoi. Okay, the Medrash says that Kadosh Baruch Hu took hold of him, figuratively, to be mechazek him, to strengthen him in the performance of the bris mila. He was afraid. Hashem was oiches biyadoi to strengthen him spiritually. So likewise, when we have an adult, so who is the sandik of Avraham Avinu? Hashem. Now, by the way, it doesn't call Hashem a sandik. It just Hashem was oiches biyado. It could be there's another term called the Baal Bris. It seems that the word sandik, we use the word sandik as it says in the Medrash, has other terms. Another term that appears in Chazal is the Baal Bris. It doesn't mean the moel. That's the goyzer. The word moel is a new word. The word for the circumciser is not the shochet, but the goyzer. What does it mean, a goyzer? The cutter. Goyzer means to cut. That is the original word used for a moel in the Midrashim and the early Mamar Chazal. The word for one who does circumcision is the goyzer. Doesn't sound like a very refined word to use for this profession, but that's the word. And then there's the call the Baal Bris. That's a very nice expression, the Baal Bris. The Baal Bris means basically the sandik, but it doesn't use the word knees. Well, by Avraham Avinu, Avraham doesn't say anywhere that Avraham sat on the knees of anyone. Not of the Ribbono Shel Olam, not of Onur Eshkol Mamre. Mamre gave him an eight. It doesn't say that anywhere. So who was the sand? So what does it mean, the sandik by Avraham, who was an adult? It means Hashem held on to his hand. And indeed, the minhag is that when an adult has a bris mila, you designate a sandik, and the sandik holds his hand. And that's the sandik for the adult. There's another minhag I saw, that the sandik puts his hands on his head. Like birchas, like you're blessing a child, that during the bris milah, whoever you select to be the sandik, he rests his hands on the head of the one who's having the bris milah, and that's who we call the sandik. Is that a real sandik? It's not so clear if that person is called a halachic sandik, because the word sandik is only used in reference to the knees. And by an adult, we do not use the knees. Now, he says something very fascinating, that in Rome, Minhag Rome, Rome is a very fascinating place. They have, everything about Rome is unique. They have their own Nusach HaTzfilah. They have their own Kinois. They have Minhagim you never heard of, you never saw before. The way they practice Orthodox Judaism in Rome is very different than anything that we're used to. And one of the unique minhagim of Rome is they did not have one sandik, they had a team too, and they did not use their knees. The way a bris milah was done in Rome was, there was like a bima, and they put the child down on this bima, and two people held down the baby. One on the right, one on the left, and the moil was in the center, and he did the bris milah. And the two people on the left and the right, they were called the team, a sandik team, together. Now, what is very disturbing, which many of the commentators pick up on, it seems that this minhag is documented. Rabbi Akiva Eger talks about this minhag, and a lot of people who are in the know talk about this minhag in Rome. And what disturbs them is, where are the knees? Where are the knees? You got it. What do you mean they did it standing? That's not fair. That's not the way we do it. We do it with the knees. And they will cite the Medrash, the Yalkut Shemoni, that says, David HaMelech said, it's not only the Yalkut Shemoni, I think there's another Medrash. Okay, I know for sure it's a Yalkut Shemoni, but it could be there's another Medrash, that David praised Hashem Kol Atzmoise Tamarna Micha Moicha, and it says that I use my knees for sandokis layelodim. So we see the knees. So how come they didn't use the knees? They did it. Okay, whatever it is. Halacha l'maisa, we all know that Bizman Hazeh today, without question, the sandik, the baby is put on his knees. Sometimes the sandik has to be raised. The chair has, because the moil can't bend down so low in a regular chair. And you see many times, They have a special chair, sometimes I see very often they take two chairs, like fold like these, like the chairs that are stackable. So they take two stackable chairs, one on top of the other, and they tell the sandik to sit down and raises him up a couple of inches, and they put something under his feet in order to raise up his knees a little bit taller, and they put down the baby on his knees. Again, the knees is the critical element of the sandokos. And there's also a very big question: does the sandik, is he totally passive, or should he do an act? So many times, I don't see what goes on every day. Right, daven today, daven chayim, there was a bris today. They have baruch Hashem, they have a bris every so often there. I never go up close, for many reasons, towards the back, but they have their bris there pretty often, and I don't know what goes on. But there's an issue: should the sandik be active? In other words, he should take the baby, or should it be what the Chazal say, an itztaba? He's just a platform. You sit there and do nothing. You just sit there, and they put the baby on his knees. Okay, then he'll hold the baby down. Once they put the baby on his knees, so then he has to hold the baby in position. But that's not considered to be being proactive. That's considered to be passive. They put the baby on his knees, so he holds the baby down. Some hold that the sandik, there is a hakpada, the sandik should take the baby. He should stretch out his arms. He should do some active maisa to participate in showing that he's the sandik by taking hold of the baby when they come to him. He takes it and he puts it down on his knees. Some say no, he should be passive, and some say adaraba, the one that should put the baby down on the knees is the father of the child. I don't know if they always do this. I think a lot of places, the moel, a lot of times the moel becomes very aggressive. Okay? The moel is very aggressive. He calls all the shots. He makes all the announcements. He tells you where to stand, what to do. He tells the photographer when to take the pictures and when not to take the pictures. A lot of the good moyalim, it's a show. And that's how it should be. That's how I like it. I like a good show. I'm into ceremony. I'm a big ceremony guy. I like when they cut the ribbon, you know? I like all that type of stuff. I like the ceremony, and I appreciate when you have a moel that makes a big deal. He makes the announcements, he does hagoshes, put on a good show. It's entertaining. But more often than not, the moel calls the shots, and he takes the baby from the kisei shel Eliyahu, and he puts it on the knees of the tzaddik. According to what I've read here in this sefer, which doesn't mean anything, that it might not be the ideal way to do it. Being that it's the father's mitzvah, bris milah, the ideal thing is for the father, the avi haben, to put the baby on the knees of his selected tzaddik. That gives him a little more oomph, chashivos, of what the bris milah is all about. It's the father giving over his child to for the keteres, and he appoints the moel to be his shliach to do the circumcision, and he appoints the tzaddik to be the mizbeach. His knees are critical. They should be there to be mekabel the child in this beautiful mitzvah.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I'm listening. Yes.
Yeah,
the
just quoting from
Likutei
Maria, he says
the Medrash
is
Sakha 5. That's the Medrash on Tehillim. So it's a very, it's an authentic Medrash. That Medrash is accepted to be as good as it gets. And it's also quoted independently, the same exact thing in the Yalkut Shemoni, which also is an ancient Medrash, not as ancient, but it's also authoritative. So it's the real deal. So you see, the word tzaddik can't just mean godfather, because it just meant godfather, it wouldn't appear in these midrashim like this.
No, but actually, they refer to kvata as godfather.
Oh, the kvata. Maybe that's what I'm making a mistake. Okay, okay, you're right. I'm making a mistake. Then you're right. I made a big mistake. You're right, Kvata. Right. I made a very big mistake.
Yeah, but not necessarily, though. Excuse me. I was reading while you were talking, the Otzi Yisrael. It says another word, in a long time ago, another word for Sandik was a Kvata. But then,
okay,
because they wanted more kibudim, they separated the two kibudim into kvata, and you know, the more people that touched gave more kibudim. But originally,
it was called the kvata.
Kvata was the sanding.
Okay, so it does go a little bit together. All right,
yes.
It's a big question how it all came out. Now here's something very interesting. Another interesting. What about, can the moil himself be the sandik? This is a Rebbe Minak by the big Rebbes. I don't know if anyone today is talented to do this. First of all, you have to be a moyel. Not every Rebbe is a moyel. And not
Rebbe
only
did it.
He was the Sandik and the moyel, Bavasachas?
Yeah.
You saw
him?
Yeah?
I didn't see it. I was told that he did it.
But he did both, Bavasachas. Okay, now what's the issue? That L'chor is the, you know, you do both. Bavas, you mamish, do everything together. One shot, you're the moil. If you also, can you imagine if you're the Avi HaBen?
If you're holding the baby's legs and arms, how can you possibly do?
You have to have talent. You have to have talent. Listen, this is not for the faint of heart. Okay? This is for people who have special talent. And there are people that, and there's no question about it, that this was something that was done by many people. Especially by Rebbes, by the big Grois Rebbes who were Moilim, they had this, it's supposed to be something very special, to be both Bevasachas, to be the Sandik and the Moil. What's the problem with that? There's a very big problem, and this is a big topic of discussion. You have to stand, there is a Minog, or even a Chiv, to stand when you make the Bracha on the Bris Milah. And in fact, he quotes a reason, I've never heard this before. There are six brachas, there's a Rosh Tevis, there are six brachas that we say, Aleitz Aleitz Sholem. Ein Lamed Tzadi. Or Olatz, Olatz Sholem. Olatz means to rejoice with peace. Olatz Sholem. Shin Lamed Mem. Or Sholem. The Rosh Tevois. Oimer. When you say Sviras Oimer, you're supposed to stand. We all know that. Komma. Levana. The Lamed stands for Kiddush Levana. Yemekabel Pnei Ashrina. Tzitzis. When you put on a talis, lis atef patzitzis, you're supposed to stand. Mm-hmm. There's a hakpada to stand when you put on the tzitzis. When you blow shofar, when you mamlech Hashem, you coronate Hashem, you're supposed to stand. The lamed is lulav. When you shake lulav and esrei, you're supposed to stand. And then the mem, the last letter, sholem, is mila, bris mila, you're supposed to stand. And there are, I don't know the makoros for each one of these things. Some of them I do, some of them I don't. There are sources. Olatz Sholem is the siman. There are six mitzvahs which we have a source that it must be done standing. So the problem is this Chassidus Sheminug, where the sandik, ideally the sandik should be the moyel to hold the baby. And as you hold the baby, you bring the sandik on your knees, you do the bris milah. If that's how you're going to do the mila, it's impossible to stand. There's no one has a kunst that you can, or you'll make the bracha and then sit. It doesn't go like that, okay? No one ever, all the people who were both moilim and the sandik at the same time, they made the bracha when they were sitting. But you're violating the halacha. It seems that this is a very popular siman, olas sholem. You're supposed to stand. So indeed, there were gedolei Yisrael that objected very strongly to this minhag of allowing the sandik to be the moihel because of this. Because the minhag Yisrael is to stand when you make the bracha, and something so fundamental, you only have one chance to do a bris mila. It's not like this year I'll take the lulav and eshek sitting, next year I'll take it standing. Okay? Okay? It's not like you have another chance. Okay? You only have one chance to make a first impression. So how could you go deny the baby the zchus that the bracha that was made upon him on bris milah was not made when you were standing? So some object, and also some hold that it's not proper. Anytime you have an opportunity to break up mitzvah into parts, it's more honorable to give it to more people. That's the proof comes from the korbanos. When they brought the korban tamid every single morning, there were 13 koyhanim that carried the parts of the animal to the Mizbeach and brought it from the ramp of the Mizbeach to the top of the Mizbeach. You don't need 13 Kohanim. One Kohen can bring the whole animal to the top of the Mizbeach. And if you want, if one Kohen can't do it, you don't need more than two or three. You don't need 13. So why were there 13? B'rovam hadras melech. The more you could, if you can take something and divide into its parts, it's more honorable, it's more of an honor for Hashem. So if you can take the bris and you can divide it into multiple parts, it's more of a covenant. In fact, in time of Chazal, we learned this. We once learned the Aruch HaShulchan, Halacha, and we learned there that it used to be the minhag, they would have one person did the Mila, a second person did the Periya, and the third person did the Mitzitza. They divided the Kibudim. It was a cover to do the priya and the mitzitza separately. They divided the kibbutzim, three different people. So the same way you divide the mila, the priya and the mitzitza, you divide the sandik from the mayel. Why should you go and give everything to one person? So that's another reason why they objected. However, that didn't stop anybody. Those who wanted to do both of asachas did both, and they said that it's not chesorin in not standing. The only time you stand is when there's no other, when you have an option to stand. But it's obvious here you can't stand. So in this case, it's not going to take away. We overlook the chesaron of not standing because in this situation you are there's nothing else that you can do. Now, okay, there's another interesting inyan of okay, by the way, a sandik, it says this is not a halacha. But it seems that there's a minhag that the sandik should go to the mikvah. Person is mechub, they've given it to a grandparent to be the sandik. The proper thing is that the sandik should go to the mikvah on the morning of the bris milah. That's what it says. And they cannot go to the bris milah, they should take a shower, tishakabin. That's what they write. They write the Maril. The Maril is the mother of all Minhagim. The Maril says something, you don't play around with the Maril. Maril, many of our Minhagim come from the Maril, the Maril, he did it. He didn't write it. The Maril did it. And the Ramah Pumfakert, he writes, the Chumra Ba'olmahu. It's a Chumra. It's not Me'ikar Hadin. Okay, you know, there's certain times you have to go to a mikvah. For example, a Sefer Torah. If a Sefer writes Hashem's name in a Sefer Torah before going to mikvah, it's pasul. The Sefer Torah is mamish pasul. Before writing Hashem's name in the Sefer Torah, you must go to mikvah. You know, only Hashem's name. You can write everything else without going to the mikvah, but Hashem's name. Erev Yom Kippur, there's a minug. It's a very, very strong minug. Ad kedekach, we don't do this, but in time of Chazal, their sources, they would make a bracha. Could you imagine when you go to mikvah Erev Yom Kippur to make a bracha, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvos v'sivanu ala tzvila? There was such a minug to make a bracha. If a person, b'zman hazeh, would make a bracha, you can't say they made a bracha levatala, because there are many sources that say that the minug to go to mikvah Erev Yom Kippur is so important. Part of the process of doing teshuvah is to go to mikvah. When you go to mikvah Erev Yom Kippur, it's not because Tosef is Tahara. It's not just because, you know, people go to Erev Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Very nice. You go to Erev Shabbos. Kvod Shabbos. Tosef es Kedusha. You want to bring upon yourself more holiness. Some go to mikvah because of Tzvilas Keri, because of Tzvilas Ezra. Okay, but going to the mikvah Erev Yom Kippur is not because of Keri, it's not because of Tosefes Kedusha, it's a din in the process of Teshuvah. A Baal Teshuvah, a person that was Mechalel Shabbos his whole life, or part of his life, and now is Choyzer B'Shuvah, and becomes a religious Jew, has to go to mikvah. A Choyzer B'Shuvah is an Mamash Achiv to go to mikvah.
Like a ger, mamash.
Choyzer b'shuva. Do you make a bracha? Our meaning is not to make a bracha, but I can show you many sources that say you mechuyev to make a bracha. And Erev Yom Kippur, we're all balei teshuva. You make a bracha. So what about going to mikvah before being a sandik? No, it's not on that level. It's a very nice thing to do, and it seems like it is very popular. I know there are definitely people that I think of Pam. Was always very mock, but they say to go to mikvah. Ad kedekach, some people, they will tell you, this lingers in my mind, I can't put a name to it, is that if they could not go to mikvah, they decline being a sandik. Mm. Okay, there are certain people, they're elderly people, and they were given the kibbutz to be a sandik many times in their life, and then someone approaches them, they want them to be a sandik, and they would say, I would be the sandik, but I can't go to mikvah. I'm just not physically fit to go to mikvah now because of my health condition, and therefore I'm going to pass it up. But they'll say, but the person that we're going to give sandik to, he's not going to mikvah. If you're not going to be the sandik, we're going to give it to the next person, and he's not going. So therefore, it's okay. So you don't go to mikvah. Sorry, I don't do it like that. Mm. When I go, I'm the sandik. I have to go to mikvah. Mm-hmm. It's none of my business. It's 100% fine. Let him be the sandik. It's fine. But when I do it, I have to go. That's what I've always done my whole life. I feel the achrayas. So I won't be the sandik. Okay? I don't know everyone says that. That lingers in my mind. I remember hearing such a thing from someone. That is very nice. Here's an interesting shayla. Let's say you want to be mechabed someone to be a sandik. A very chosh of a person. A very big talmud chacham. Okay? He has good knees. He's a mahalich ben ha'imdim ha'ele. But he says, I have to travel. I can't. If you want me to be the sandik, we're going to have to daven at 9 o'clock. Or we're going to have to daven at 10 o'clock. Because I can't get there so quickly. I live far, far away. It takes me 2 hours to travel. I live in Boston. I live here. I live there. I live in New York. You want me to come to Boston? Listen, this is the best I can do. I can't be there 7 o'clock. I can be there 9 o'clock. So, what's the alternative? To have the bris milah 7 o'clock. Zrizim makdimim lemitzvos. There's a special hakpad when it comes to bris milah. Zrizim makdimim lemitzvos. You only get one chance to make a first impression. What has kedima? Zrizim makdimim lemitzvos with a sanduk that's not so choshuv, that's less choshuv, versus giving the kavod to a very holy person, but it's going to have to be done later in the day. It's a very tough question. Okay, let's say, so I think basically the answer that you're going to hear is, I don't know if it's actually accurate, is if you're going to do it during Shacharis, and the question is, are you going to daven Shacharis 6 o'clock or 9 o'clock? It's okay. Do it 9 o'clock. It's Shacharis. But if you want to mechabit a person to be sandik and he only can be there in the afternoon, the Gadol Hador, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, okay, Rav Chaim Kanievsky will be your sandik, but he can't get to America before 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Could you imagine? He'll be the sandik. Rav Chaim Kanievsky will be the sandik for this baby, but it's coming 3 o'clock. So we're not going to have it during Shacharis. We're going to have it in the afternoon. Or I can mechabit Rabbi Yankel, whoever it is. Rabbi Yankel will mechabit 6 o'clock in the morning. So I think then the halacha is you give it to Rabbi Yankel. You give it to someone in the morning, Shacharis. If the question is 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, you can say that's called Zrizim Akdimim Lemitzvah, that's still Zman Tefillah. You're still going to make Zman Tefillah. Once already you're taking away the bris milah from Shacharis, and you're pushing it off to later in the day, then the sandakois is not that important to be moichel on an ikar hadin. A fundamental of yados is zerizim makdimim lemitzvahs. Sandakois is very nice. Anyone can be a sandak. You don't have to be the gadol hador to be the sandak. So if the Gadol Hador can't get it by 9 o'clock, no, so you give it to someone else. Right. The world will go on. An ikur in Yadus is Zrizim Makdimim Lemitzvahs. Let's not. What? Oh, so he's asking a very good shaila. He's asking, I want to go his sandakah. He's asking, what about the moil? Let's say you have a moil mumcha. You have a very good moil, but he only can come, let's say, 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's very busy. You only get him, or you can have stam. So then, it really depends on umaniyat. Why do you want this moil? The same issue. If you could only get a certain moil, and he only can come later, why do you want this moil? Explain to me why. Is it because he has skill? His hands are golden hands. Mm-hmm. He has skill. He knows how to do it very well. He does the way it's supposed to be done, or no, adaraba, he doesn't even do such a good job. But he's a chosh of a person. He's a holy, holy person. Doesn't count. Holiness does not count one bit. And does not, and that's one bit. It is on this, on what's important for the goyzer, the moyel, don't forget, the moyel is just a mechanic. He's just a plumber. He's a goyzer. If the goyzer is a skilled goyzer, because the situation is very, there are certain types of children that it's a very delicate, you need a specialist. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the foreskin is very, very, there are complications. Mm-hmm. There are complications, and you really need to bring in a specialist who knows, sometimes it has to be done, it has to have surgery. It's not so simple. Mm-hmm. So then, then if it's umniyad, wait. You might even be allowed to wait milo shaloi bizman. But if the reason why you're waiting to the afternoon is not because the moyal has any special skill in anyone else, but it's because you just like him. He's a holy man. That doesn't count. It doesn't. Sandakois, holiness counts. That's what it's all about, sandakois. They say al pi Kabbalah is the sandik has a hashpa on the nima. That whoever, you should be very careful who you select to be a sandik, because the child will turn out to be like that person. You can't say that. That's an irresponsible statement. But you should think about that. It's a serious matter. That's what they say. They say that whoever is the sandik, his mazel, has influence over the baby's development. Mm-hmm. And they say some, they no one wants to say names, but when you read these type of stories, they say, they'll tell you, I know in this family, there were three boys. And the, each boy had a different sandik, A, B, C. Mm-hmm. There's a big Rosh Hashiva, a big Yerush Shemayim, and then there was this person, and then the third was not such a great guy, was the sandik. Why was he the sandik? Ma'isher kachoya. And they'll tell you the one that had that sandik did not turn out so well. That's an irresponsible thing to say. They'll never tell you the names of people. That's an irresponsible thing to say, and we don't believe in that. Yet, think about it. When you select the sandik, you know, don't get carried away with this, but it should make an impression that it's definitely important to make a sandik a person who's really a true Yerush Shemayim. Can you make a goya sandik? You want the guy to hold the baby. A guy.
After what we just said, it doesn't seem
a guy. Oh, all right. So that's hashkafa. But what about halacha? Halacha.
Why should anybody want a guy?
A guy, let's say, I'll tell you why. Symbol, let's say the ger tzedek. A ger. Very common. A ger. A ger has a baby. Okay. Ger tzedek. And he has great appreciation. He's very close to his parents. Mm. And he wants his parents to participate in the bris milah. Why can't my father hold a baby? Why can't my father who's the guy? You have these type of stories. Why can't my father who's a guy be the sandik? I want to be mechabit.
You have this problem with, let's say, all the reform children who maybe the parents aren't, or even if the parents are, what's the difference between him and any other?
So if the rabbi is going to say, listen, no, you don't do that. It's going to create tension. How far should a rabbi go in persuading a person not to let a guy be like the sandik? Technically, it's a kosher bris. Okay, the sandik is not a halacha that you have to have a Jew to be a sandik. But how far should you go in preventing a guy from being a sandik? It seems you should go pretty far. Okay, one of the Gdolim says, he obviously doesn't mean this literally, but if he wrote such a thing, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, he writes it from Shuvas, better let the baby not have a bris milah than to have a goy be the sandik. Wow. Now, obviously, he cannot possibly mean that lahalacha, right. But if he could write such a statement, it goes to show how spooky, how unacceptable this is to allow a goy to be a sandik. What about a cotton, a child under bar mitzvah? Yes, there's no reason why not. A boy under bar mitzvah can be a sandik. A Jewish boy, it's a halacha. A boy under bar mitzvah can be a sandik. What about a woman? The mother wants to be the sandik of the baby. So it says in the Ramah, we don't allow this. Pritzus. It's pritzus for the male to go bend down in front of a woman to be in such proximity to a woman when he's doing the bris milah. He's doing the bris milah and he's mamsh hovering over a woman. So you'll say, let's say the avi aben. What about if the avi aben is the moel and the woman is the mother? So it's his wife. So what's the problem? So first of all, she's at that time she's a nida. So let's say it's midlash shloim bizman. She's no longer a nida. Is it pritzus? It seems loy plug. It seems that the halacha is loy pilug. Under no circumstance is it acceptable today, even though maybe it was in ancient times. Tzipora was l'chor the tzandik of Moshe Rabbeinu's. She did the bris milah also. But today, the Ramah says mishum pritzusa. It's not, but technically there's nothing wrong, but mishum pritzusa, it's not done. Okay, so what cotton can do, okay, let me just now just we'll leave with one last thing, and that is who is more choshev? Is the sandik more choshev or the moil more choshev? Who gets the aliyah in the Beis HaKnesses? The sandik. It's beferish in Shulchan Aruch. The sandik is more choshev than the moil. And the moil is just called the goyzer. He's the cutter. The sandik is the one who brings in the spirituality into the environment. When who gets the aliyah? Well, you give it to the avi haben. The avi haben gets the aliyah. Let's say the avi haben is a kohen, and then we have another aliyah available, so we can give the third aliyah, the Yisrael, either to the
the Goyzer, or to the Sandik, who gets the Aliyah? The Sandik. It's Beferish and Shulchanach. But here is the catch. The catch is some want to say that the reason why we give the Aliyah is a tremendous chiddush, and some say it's Meduik in the Ramah like this. It's very big chiddush, very important you saw it. The reason why we give the Moyel, the Aliyah, the Sandik, the Aliyah is not because the Sandik is more Choshev. It's the same reason why we give the one who reads the Haftorah an Aliyah. Why? The one that reads the Haftorah, the Navi, who reads the Maftir, we give him an Aliyah, the last Maftir, we give him the last. Why? Because it's a Zilzal. It's not so Choshev. To lay in the Haftorah, to make the brachas, the brachas of the Haftorah are not as choshev as getting an aliyah from the Torah. In order that he should not be insulted, that we're giving him, oh, we're just giving you to read from the Nevi'im, so we also give him the last aliyah. We give him the maftir. In order to be mechazek him, because it's not so choshev. It's the same thing with the sandik. Be'etzem, who is more choshev? The moyel is more choshev. The goyzer, he's the choshev. You know, he's doing the mitzvah. Let's not make any mistake over here. Who makes the bracha? He's choshev. He's the choshev person. The sandik, is chop liver. What are you? You're just holding the baby? Come on, you're a nobody. So people have a tendency, oh, you're just a sandik, big deal. Big deal. Yippee-hoo, good for you, you're the sandik. In order to be mechazek, the chashivus of the sandikois, we give him the aliyah, not the moyel. Okay, so it's a machlekes apoiskin. Who really is more chashiv? Is the sandik more chashiv, or is the moyel more chashiv? Many will say the sandik is more choshev face down. He gets the aliyah, he's a holy person, his knees, he's all the drush, like I told you, and he's the one who's supposed to, he's really supposed to pay. The sandik is supposed to give a very nice gift to the baby. He has to pay for it. He's more choshev. The moyel, he's a surgeon. Umanyad, he's a surgeon. He's the goyzer. Nu, he makes the bracha. So you make the bracha, good for you. You made the bracha, nice, good for you. Others say, punt vakert, the one who does the mila is more chashev. The sandik, what are you already? You're just holding the baby, we don't need you. We can put the baby on the table. We'll also be, we can give it to a child, we can give it to a woman, we can give it even to a guy. The world won't come to an end if a guy is a sandik. It's not the right thing to do. So you're a sandik, good for you, but you're not necessary. Oh, not necessary, he got depressed. He'll have to go to a psychiatrist in order to mechazek him. We give him the aliyah, but not because he's really mochash. It's only because of chizek. Okay, this is a little bit of a sandakai. Everything we learn over here is new to me. I think we learned new stuff. Most of what we learned over here was new stuff today. Yes, have a wonderful day. Be well, everyone.
Five years ago on a Sunday morning, by Rav Chaim Shemirsky. It was back-to-back prison, right? One of the other.
Yeah.
And it was 11:30 in the morning.
Okay, that's still shot. I mean, it's past his man tefillah.
Yeah.
It's past his man tefillah.
I was there too. I was also by two brisim by Chaim, and the women made a bracha.
That's the girl. The women made a bracha.
What do you mean the women made a bracha? What do you mean they made a bracha?
The men went under the women's section, and the women made a bracha.
What bracha did they make? What bracha did they make?
A goymel.
Oh, a goymel for having a baby. That's it for having a baby. Okay, the bracha is a goymel. Fine, okay.
All right. The
worst,
they made it.
Okay.
And then also two ma'aserah with chashiva moilim. One moil was in shul. I went over to him. I said, "Who should I give the aliyah to?" He said, "Give it to me." And by my youngest son's bris, the moil came from Square Town, and he had taken the bus. And right when he walked into shul, he walked over to me and he said to me, "He says, don't give me an aliyah. I was oiler already." It was a very chashiva moil.
So they didn't give it, not the sandik. They didn't want to give it to the sandik.
No, it seems like the moil gets it.
But it says in Shulchan Aruch. It says in Shulchan Aruch
Beferish. I know that. But I'm talking about my Sarah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
One was Rabbi Elio Zimmerman. Benson Hurst. And the other one was Chaim Berger.
Because I daven all the years in Chaim Berlin. Chaim Berlin, you know, they always give the Aliyah to the Avi HaBen. But sometimes the Avi HaBen is a Kohen or a Levi. And then they give the Shlishi to the Rosh Hashiva. The Rosh Hashiva is always the Sandik. They always give, and that's the minig in the yeshiva. The minig of the yeshiva, not always, but 99%, the hakpada is to give even multiple times. Always, and if you don't want to give it to the Rosh Hashiva, which many don't, that's not their minig. So they have it somewhere else. They have it at the early minyan, a different minyan. They make it in a hall, whatever it is. But when they have the bris mil in the yeshiva, the minig ruba druba is to give it to the sandukos of the Rosh Hashiva. And therefore, when the Avi HaBen is a Kohen or a Levi, so he gets that Aliyah, and they call up the Rosh Hashiva for Shlishi. I never saw them call up the Moel for an Aliyah in Chaim Berlin. Not that I recall. Never saw that.
Because you have the Rosh Hashiva there, that's why.
He's a Sandik. Yeah, but they're not giving him because he's the Rosh Hashiva. They're giving him because he's the Sandik.
Right.
Now he's not so well. So even when he comes to davening, they don't always give him the Aliyah, because it's extreme. It's a whole ordeal for him to get the Aliyah. Is a major ordeal. He can't walk. They have to take him with the wheelchair. It's a major production. So they don't give him the Aliyah. They ask the Gabbai. He has a Gabbai. And the Gabbai always like tells him, no, the Gabbai says, don't give him the Aliyah. And then the Rosh Hashiva privately, after they leave, he tells the Gabbai, why'd you take away my Aliyah? I know this is a fact. I know this. The Gabbai told me. All right.
Gabbai,
yeah.
One more variation.
Yes, yes.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What about a female Sandik?
Right, we mentioned that.
Qualified in today's times because she's a frum person and also a specialist, a doctor, which right. we didn't have years ago.
Right, so we spoke about that. It says in the Ramah. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch says that a woman should not be the Sandik Mishum Piritsusa. It's just not an Orthodox setting. No, I mean a moyel a female be. So that's a shiloh. Woman should not. That's another halach. A woman should not is not allowed to be a moyel. Meikar hadin, because she's not chayiv in bris mila. The only one that can do a bris mila is a person that they themselves have an obligation to do the mitzvah. A woman,
but she's the only one who can.
Yes, if she's the only one, yes.
Just like you say,
yes, yes, yes.
You pick someone because of their ability.
Yes,
she has that certain ability.
Yes, the halach is very clear. If there's no one else available to do the bris milah, a woman can do the bris milah. Absolutely, there are a lot of stories like this. But
like Tzipora.
Tzipora. There are a lot of stories about this in the Holocaust. Women on their children, they gave birth, they gave the bris milah. Yes, when there's no one else available, a woman can do the bris milah. I think she can make a bracha. But when when she's not, when there are other options, she should not do the bris milah because of a halachic reason, not because of, you don't really need to come on to pritzusa. It's because she's not chayif. Because it's very interesting. Think about this. If the halacha would be that a woman lechatchila can do the bris milah, why can't we then say we could have a woman who's a sandik and the moil is a sandik? So there's no pritzos. Let the one who's the moil is a woman and the sandik is a woman. There's no pritzos at all in that case.
Right.
So what would you say in that case? Okay. But that those cases are extremely rare, obviously, because today, Baruch Hashem, there are other options. But you're right. Let's say they do like in the hospital. You need it to be done with a surgical procedure. Only a woman is qualified to do the procedure. You're right. Of course. Then the rule is a woman can do it. Lechatchil, not a guy.
Right.
But you know there are situations where the only one that can do the bris milah is a guy. Okay. There are a situation like that where it's an extremely delicate situation, a very delicate type of situation, and you need to go do it in the hospital. And you need a professional, and the only ones that are available are non-Jews. So you don't have a choice. A non-Jew can do the bris milah. The din of bris milah, according to many poskim, is not the act of bris milah. It's the result. The result is what counts. The child should be a person that does not have a foreskin. The element of doing the act of Mila is secondary. The primary role of Mila is the result. The child, when the day is over, should not have an Arla. How you remove the Arla doesn't make a difference. A woman can have it removed, a non-Jew can have it removed, a child can have it now removed. This that we have a hakpada, we warn very much that it should be done by a male adult, Talmud Chacham, this is an extra layer of stringency. But when that extra layer of stringency is not practical, then we fall back to all of the backups. And the backups include, like you said, a woman, a child, a non-Jew, as long as the result comes out that the child has a bris milah.
There was a big tumult a few years ago, the modern Orthodox shul out of town.
Yeah.
They gave Amida Lebracha.
Amida Lebracha, interesting.
Yeah, it was a big, everybody yelled at it. It's a chutzpah.
So what happened at the end?
No, this shul whatever did it, but they got the
flak. Okay, by the way, that's the very chash of a thing. Amida Lebracha is also a sandik. The one that holds the baby, when they give the name, is also called a sandik. Called sandik oimed. That's called the sandik oimed. It's also an extension of the sandik. L'cha'oira, the sandik oimed is also included in Peritzusa. The one who holds the baby when they give the name is also in halacha called the sandik. So when it says in the Ramah that we don't give a woman sandikois because of peritzusa, I'm assuming it includes the sandik oimed, the sandik oimed. So it's right. You're going against what it says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says you don't give a woman sandikois. It's peritzus. Lav davka peritzus when the mother is bending down to do the bris milah. It's peritzus for the woman to come and stand right there with all the men in shul when they're making the brachas. Absolutely. It's an Orthodox shul. It's unacceptable. That's called pritzos in an Orthodox shul. If you're not Orthodox, okay, if you're not Orthodox, if you want to be Orthodox, you got to follow the rules.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about a woman davening Kabbalah Shabbos? In that shul, they probably let a woman daven Kabbalah Shabbos also.
Don't get into that.
Okay. Rabbi Rakefet said the best line. Mayer likes this. Rabbi Rakefet says he spoke about a woman davening Kabbalah Shabbos. He says, I don't know about you, but he says, if a woman is davening Kabbalah Shabbos, either I'm not interested in the words, I'm interested in the who. And if I'm not interested in the who, then it must be that I'm not a man. So manavshach. If this is a shul of men, then you got a problem. Otherwise, he said it in the most blunt way of it doesn't hold water allowing a woman to do Kabbalah Shabbos.
I'm gonna say something controversial now, but this all starts from musical Abdullah. The slippery slope. It all starts with musical Abdullah. That's where the
word
comes from.
I would say it all saw some music from Slichus.
No, that came later.
That came later?
Sorry, I can't disagree with you more than that. I think that his musical Abdullah that's done in front of men, and there's actually nothing wrong with that. I'm saying
it might not be how long.
I disagree with you totally, I'm sorry.
Okay, one second.
Totally disagree with you on that.
I want to say something, okay? There's been musical instruments around for the last 500 years, okay? And everybody, your father, your Zaidi, your elder Zaidi, no one ever had musical Abdullah. So it doesn't fly. That's all. Doesn't fly. And it's a slippery slope.
I'm sorry, I disagree with you there. We'll have to leave it there. I disagree with you.
Ezra, what do you say about musical slichas? And we want to, what do you tell us your honest opinion?
I've been to them. I think it's fun. I think it enhances the
tefillah. The slichas, the musical slichas.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you have to call Magdalen Gavar. You take a look. The paces are packed. So what do you want to say? They're all wrong?
Yeah.
You stramel from all walks of life there. I can't. I have to disagree with you. If it's done in a, and also you also placed them in the base of Mikdash. Okay, when they bought the carbon talmud, did you have Levim singing?
That's only in the base of Mikdash. So let me ask a question.
It comes from Beis Yaakov having the girls in kindergarten singing Modani. That's where it comes from.
Let me ask you, what would happen, Ezra, I want to ask you, what would happen if
we're talking about a case where it's done, you know, we're not talking about women now, we're talking about in front of men.
Right.
It's done, you go to the five towns, you go to Rabbi Weinberg, you go to, you know, Arshul.
He doesn't have music, he doesn't have music.
He has music?
Slichus? Rabbi Weinberger in the Lawrence.
Ramosha Weinberger and
Lawrence. Slichus.
They have musical slichus.
That's so, the music of slichus?
No, he has. I've watched the slichus. There's no music.
No music. He has no music.
Rabbi Tversky, we had this year.
Music by slichus?
It's a company that.
Havdalah they have.
I have to disagree with you. Let's just leave it there. Okay.
Okay, but what was your question? What would happen? What would happen if, let's say, you have a Monday morning, bar mitzvah, the boy is putting on tefillin, and also in honor of the bar mitzvah, we can have a musical shachris on a Monday morning in shul, on a Sunday morning.
Look, you know, you have to know.
That's already past the red line.
A slippery slope. You have to know what the limitations are. Of course, you can.
Ezra, how about the musical levaya?
Let's just stop it right now. But I think musical Abdullahs and musical, I see nothing wrong with it. I think it's done, and I think it's something that's if anything, it's happening more and more, and it's done in a frum b'kavodik fashion.
Okay, but you have to make a very important distinction. Havdalah is something done in the home. There's no halacha of making havdalah in the shul. Even those who make havdalah in the shul, that's for the orchim. It's not a din in the tefillah. Slichos.
Generally, I'm talking about musical havdalah. Right. I do it. We've done it in my house.
Okay. Right. No.
Right. But it's not. If you have, let's say,
it doesn't appear.
A town where you have people, especially the small winters, where
right.
You know, you have it's done. But I don't know all.
Yeah.
The,
yeah.
All,
fine.
All the reason why people do it, but I'm
it
saying
doesn't appear that
have way, in the book of it, that the way there's
okay.
I think if anything, it puts a lot of ruach into it.
Okay, havdalah, but you have to understand there's a very important distinction between havdalah and slichas. Havdalah is not an act that is connected to the Beis HaKnesset. Just because we have it in the shul doesn't mean anything. Havdalah is not part of tefillah. Havdalah is havdalah. You do whatever you want, havdalah. Okay, he's arguing here that it's not traditional. All right, put that aside. But slichos is a different level. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm none of my business right or wrong. But you have to appreciate there's a very, very great jump between havdalah and slichos. Slichos is considered in halacha to be a tefillah. Ashrei, chatzi kaddish. Then the Yud Gimel Midos of Slichos is connected to Shemona Esrei, this Tachnun. Slichos is a different league. It's mamish, a miniature tefillah. No one would dare have, in the Orthodox world, not yet, I never heard anyone would dare have music for any tefillah, Shachris, Mincha, Maariv. That is clearly... Either it's I don't know the rules. Either it's clearly halachic.
I agree with you there, but I think that just as a prelude to Yom Ha'Arayim, and I think also by the way, in Eretz Yisrael, Rish Chodesh, that very lot of places say Hallel with musical instruments as well.
Oh, I never heard that before. That's new to me.
Absolutely, yep. A lot of it's done in shuls. So
that's new to me.
And Kabbalah Shabbos also with the music.
Kabbalah Shabbos is not.
They do earlier. They had that in Germany also with the organs.
Kabbalah Shabbos is a different
one. That It's done. It's accepted. Okay. It's catching on. It's not like and it's done in most prestigious schools. And I think it's keeping with an halacha. Maybe it may be something new that we, you know, that probably, you know.
Okay, Eish Kodesh, I remember, I saw the videos in Eish Kodesh.
Whatever I've seen it done, I think it tremendously enhances.
Okay, far, 100%. But you know, in Eish Kodesh, I also remember watching the videos. I don't recall there being music.
There's no music there.
There is a kumzitz before. And
that's not the slichas.
Then maybe I stand to be corrected, but there was a kumzitz.
Okay, that's fine.
In our shul, we have it. We have it during slichas, and I think it enhances it tremendously.
Okay. There's no. You just draw. We have to be careful to draw the distinction. It's a very big.
What I'm saying is that you can't say it's a slippery slope, and that this reform started because some shul had. These reform rabbis, reform didn't start
not with reform. I'm not talking about reform, I'm talking about modern Orthodox rabbis. I'll name his name. Avi Weiss thinks he's the Posik Adar.
Okay,